And now, from the Room 111 studios, it's Hacking Engagement with James Sternovan.
Hey there, listener. Welcome back to the Hacking Engagement podcast. I'm so glad you're here. When I retired from teaching high school last year, I worried about losing all of the social interaction that I got from teaching 150 students daily. So I secured an adjunct position teaching aspiring educators at Muskingum University. I also teach refugees how to speak English. These gigs have been a joy, but it's a different life because I'm only teaching 3 days a week, which is also a joy. My newfound freedom affords me the opportunity to explore, grow, and take risks. I also want to keep expanding my human capital. Relationships make life worth living, and I love forging new ones. One area of growth that I've been exploring this year is fitness. I have so much more time to work out now, and I love it. I research ways that I could challenge myself physically and grow myself socially. At the end of my exploration, I concluded that I should join a CrossFit gym. CrossFit significantly challenges you physically and promotes community. CrossFit gyms are highly social places. That's exactly what I'm looking for. I found an excellent local gym, CrossFit Polaris. Christy Armo is the owner and a prominent Games athlete. I love her teaching style, and I was excited to learn from her and the other coaches at Polaris. But unfortunately, COVID-19 pandemic short-circuited my plans. After just 3 introductory classes, the gym was forced to close, and I was left high and dry. So I got busy coaching myself. I pulled the workout of the day, the WOD, off the CrossFit website and started doing them. I watched training videos and listened to podcasts, hoping to improve my Olympic lifting form. Lifting's a key part of CrossFit. I decided that I was going to take one of the most challenging Olympic lifts, the snatch, and learn how to do it. Here's a description of a snatch. The snatch can be described as jumping a barbell through a range of motion and receiving it in an overhead squat. And here's, I have a clip on my show notes of a young woman performing a snatch perfectly. Now, when it comes to snatch, you got to be strong, you got to be mobile, you got to be explosive, you got to be coordinated, and you got to be courageous to perform this lift. And I'm starting from ground zero, but I'm determined to master it. When I searched Olympic lifting techniques on Google, YouTube, and podcasts, one name kept materializing, Mike Bergner. Now, all of you who are inclined to exit this podcast immediately because you're not interested in learning about performing an Olympic snatch, stop yourself. Do not hit that X. This program is not about lifting. It's about teaching. And I'm going to say this. I'm going to make a pretty bold statement. Mike Bergner is one of the nation's premier educators. Here's a bit about Coach. He has a BA from Notre Dame and played in their 1966 National Football Championship team. He has an MS from the University of Kentucky in exercise physiology, where he was also the strength coach. He was a captain in the Marine Corps. He's a senior international weightlifting coach for the United States. He's considered the godfather of Olympic lifting for CrossFit. He got into CrossFit in its infancy. And for decades, Coach Bergner was a proud public educator teaching high school physical education in California. I got to know Coach Bergner because I sent him an email asking him a question. The next thing I knew, I was in his level 1 weightlifting class. This is a special man, and he's going to talk about his mentors and challenge you not only to listen to the ones you already have, but to seek new ones. Buckle up, man. This is one of my favorite episodes. Hey, so get this, listener. My publisher contacts me and says, I love the way Hacking Engagement is selling. How about doing 50 more? I was all over it like a cheap suit. So the name of the book is Hacking Engagement Again, 50 Teacher Tools That Will Make Students Love Your Class. And it's going to be available on Amazon's virtual shelves in the late summer of 2017. In the meantime, if you're looking for more teacher empowerment resources, as always, visit hacklearning.com. hackingengagement.org. Now let's get back to the solutions part of the Hacking Engagement Podcast. Well, it's just a great honor today to talk to Coach Mike Bergner. Say hello, Coach.
Hey, how you doing? Good talking to you.
And, you know, I had to go on WeatherBug. Coach lives in Bonsall, right?
Bonsall, yeah.
Bonsall, California. And does your weatherman just, like, get on the Xerox machine every day, man? 80 degrees and sunny? That's pretty much every day, right?
I'm spoiled. I mean, you know, in the wintertime, it gets down to 60, and I'm wearing a beanie and a down jacket.
You got it. Now this is an Illinois guy. But I was looking on the map. He grew up in Marion, Illinois. That's a heck of a lot farther south than people probably think.
No, my part of the country is called Bloody Williamson County because of all the old bootleggers and coal miners and that type of personnel and, you know, dairy farmers and agriculture. And but they were a very tough population that supported the South during the Civil War. Yeah. So, that's how.
You're like an hour south of St. Louis, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, about an hour and a half, 2 hours, yeah.
So that's way down there. That doesn't surprise me. Is it hilly down there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, I grew up in Giant City State Park where the Illini Indians were located. And my dad used to take me down to Giant City State Park, and we'd look for arrowheads.
Yeah.
And we had it back in the, early 50s. We had a ton of those things that were just laying around, and we'd go hiking out there, and we'd find arrowheads all the time, and just artifacts, in general. So Southern Illinois was a great place, and it's way south. It's right almost where the Mississippi and the Ohio River come together.
Well, I have to ask you this because I heard you talk about your, and we're going to get into your football playing days here soon, but, you're big time player in the state of Illinois, and you went to Notre Dame. Weren't there a lot of people that wanted you to go be a Fighting Illini?
Well, it was close because Pete Elliott and he was the guy that I really liked, and Butkus was a year ahead of me, I believe, and we used to go up and see him play all the time, and I loved watching him. But my grandmother was a Notre Dame fan and loved Newt Rockne, and if I hadn't gone to Notre Dame, she probably would have shot me in my sleep or so.
Well, listen, did you ever consider becoming an Ohio State Buckeye? Because that's where I went to school.
Hell no, I wouldn't. No. With respect, I love Woody Hayes, man.
He's going to come up during this presentation.
Oh yeah, he's amazing.
Did you get recruited by OSU?
No, I don't think back in that day that Ohio State was pretty much trying to recruit everybody out of Ohio and Pennsylvania. Uh-huh. I think anybody from Southern Illinois was kind of like a sleeper, So. I was very fortunate that I had a couple of Notre Dame graduates that were lawyers in my hometown. And so they kind of, which what Notre Dame does, if they see somebody's got some potential, then they'll write the head football coach or the athletic director and let them know that you ought to take a look at this guy.
Perfect. I grew up in Eastern Ohio, and our television station was Akron Canton, big Catholic area. And on Sundays, back in the 60s, we always used to watch Notre Dame highlights with Lindsey Wagner. Nelson. I forget his name. Lindsey something.
Yeah, Lindsey Nelson, I think it was.
And he always used to go to the 45-yard line. He had this real weird way of saying it. Okay.
I know.
Well, here's the deal. In the intro, I talk about my goal of performing an Olympic snatch. I remembered listening to a podcast where a famous CrossFitter and mobility guru by the name of Kelly Starrett interviewed you. You remember that interview?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I joined that program, so I searched your name and found numerous interviews, my favorite being the CrossFit podcast. I'm going to put a link to that on my show notes. I found your story compelling. I could relate to you as a coach and public educator. I liked what others said about you and your willingness to help those with goals. I started watching your YouTube training videos. Even though I'd never met you, you became my mentor. I mean, and you can have a mentor that you don't meet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I decided to shoot you an email, and I was thrilled when you responded. Now, I have to ask you, man, what compelled you to respond to my email?
You know what? I've always had a rule for me, and that anybody that took the time to write me an email or a text or a phone call deserved a response. And I've held myself to that to this day, and I still do that. I give out my phone number and my email freely because I tell everybody it's basically because my wife makes me work in the yard if I'm not kept. But you know, people feel very shy about writing you, and because they don't know whether you're going to answer them. You know, my wife's not going to make me work in the yard, but it kind of cuts the slice a little bit. You know that, hey, keep me out of working in the yard, man. Just send me a video, send me an email, let me know what you need help with, and I'll be glad to do it. I mean, I'm a retired educator right now, right? And I got time on my hands. Obviously, with this quarantine, it's easy, and I enjoy sharpening my eye. You know, I mean, I look at people and their faults when they're doing the snatch and the clean and the jerk, and I really enjoy looking and breaking it down and taking screenshots of the movement pattern so that I can give it back to them, and I don't feed it to them. I make them tell me, what do you see?
Yeah.
And, you know, 90% of the time when I slow it down and put it frame by frame on that video, they will, oh, geez, I'm being pulled forward on the balls of my feet. You know, so, I mean, obviously if they've taken my course, then there's an easier communication because they know what I'm talking about. Somebody that will write me at the top and just say, hey, what's going on here? And if I frame by frame them, they're going to have a different reference point. So therefore, I have to coach a little bit differently than I would if I have somebody that's taken my course and understands my terminology and so on and so forth. But to answer your question, basically, it's just a matter of I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And it's, you've taken the time to write and somebody else has. And so you deserve an answer.
Well, listen, I was expecting that answer. And I'm thrilled with that answer. And let me tell you how it impacted me. I got your email back, and I was just like, this is awesome. So I called you, and we chatted. And right after that, and you mentioned this in this quarantine where we're all trying to teach, and it's really weird, had a couple students who did some work, and they wanted some feedback on it. And I was hungry. And I was thinking about getting some lunch. And I said, no, damn it, man, Coach Bergner sent me an email back. These guys are motivated. They want answers. So I jumped right on those emails, and that's because of you.
Thank you.
Okay, now, I have to ask you this because this is what this program's about. You've had a lot of them. I've had a lot of them. How would you describe a mentor?
Well, I think a mentor is somebody that is basically going to lead by example. I mean, as a Marine captain and infantry leader, you know, I prided myself and try to lead by example with my units, my troops that I trained. In the classroom, I tried to lead by example. I would never ask my students to do something that I wasn't willing to do. And so early in my teaching career, when I asked a student to do push-ups or squats or run 3 miles or whatever, I did that with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I wanted to be there as a mentor, just visibly in that aspect of that role. But at the same time, I wanted my students to feel comfortable coming to me with any kind of challenge that they may have, whether it be weightlifting or whether it be, you know, nutrition, whether it be having trouble with their parents, they're not getting along with their parents, whatever. I wanted them to feel comfortable with that, being able to have some dialogue. And so to me, a mentor is someone that, you know, the person's going to feel comfortable with, safe with, they're going to trust, you know, with the information they're given. I mean, a mentor is somebody that you can go to where you don't feel comfortable going to your own parents, you know, and so you got to real be careful there. It's a slippery slope, but, you know, a young, you know, 17, 18, 19-year-old that's got having trouble at home with mom and dad because they're acting a certain way or acting out a certain way. The hormones are going in a certain direction. And so that person coming to you and trying to get feedback or in a different perspective is a very important, in my mind, it's very important, and you have to handle that very correctly, you know.
I love what you just said, because in dealing with aspiring younger teachers, they don't understand the power of this.
Oh, yeah.
For instance, we're going to talk about some of the mentors in your life, and we're going to get to Father Lang and the weightlifting coach at Notre Dame. But if you could go back in time to when you first met him and project into the future and talk about how his influence on you has created all these things, I think he'd be shocked.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So here's the thing, man. You know, you get a 22, 23-year-old person and they're walking in and they become a teacher. It's not like just interacting with your friends.
Yeah.
These are high-stakes interactions. They change lives.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it's critical on the role today in today's education, mm-hmm. that you have that, you have that knowledge, but you have that ability to accept being a mentor too.
Yeah. Well, like I talked to you and I had a goal to snatch my body weight. Fortunately, I don't weigh much. Now, in your orbit, I mean, your daughter can snatch 190 pounds. Your son was in the 2008 Olympics performing the snatch. Snatching your body weight's not real impressive based on your orbit, but I would never, never get that feeling from being around you, because it's a goal of mine. You're going to help me with it. So that's when you're talking about it coming right down to people's level.
Yeah, yeah.
Something else, Coach, that I want to add to what you said, and my father-in-law is a really good example of this. My wife is a preventative maintenance freak.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she can tear apart an engine. She's more of a man than I am in a lot of ways. It's impressive. And that's for her father. And her father, was a rural guy that just knew how to fix everything. But the one thing that she said about him, and you do this well, is he would sacrifice his daily agenda or lengthen his daily agenda to teach his daughter something that he thought would be important for her for the long haul. He could get the job done faster if he did it himself.
Right.
He'd pull her in and say, let me show you how I'm doing this. I think a mentor also does that.
Yeah. I think you're right. It's, you know, you just have to be able to pick your moments, yeah. You know, pick your moments where you're educating them by example, but then you have to pick your moments where you let them educate themselves too, but be there for them to ask questions or, you know, make comments or whatever, you know. It's just being available more than anything else.
I love it. Now, before we dive deeper, I'd love to hear about some of your mentors. I'm going to ask you to reflect. I'll prompt you with a phase of your life, and then you can describe the mentors or mentor that impacted you and influences you now, impacted you then and influences you now. Let's talk about growing up in Marion, Illinois.
Well, my first mentor, I would tell you that was my dad, my father. He was basically a dairy guy and a coal miner. And he was a very, very strong character in my life, and I just wanted to soak up everything that he would tell me. But he was my dad and I was a kid, and, you know, I would take what I liked and I'd leave the rest and kind of go from there. And then as I was growing up, I grew up as a much taller individual than I am now. So I got my height early. And so there was a guy by the name of Wayne Whitehead, who was my sixth grade teacher. And he got me in basketball when I was in the fourth grade, when fourth graders couldn't play basketball, but I was tall enough. And he brought me into that fold. And for fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, I had Wayne Whitehead as my mentor.
Yeah.
And into junior high, there was a teacher by the name of Donnie Grisham, who was my basketball coach and track coach.
Right.
And in high school was Clay D'Amati, who was my football coach and my drafting teacher. And then, of course, Notre Dame was Eric Parsegian and Father Lang. I mean, it was – and then after that, I named my children after two Marines that I that I served with that were very, very strong mentors for me. And, you know, just the list can go on and on and on and on. But I think anybody that tries to propel themselves upward is looking for good mentors or good role models so that they can, you know, get feedback from, whether it's face-to-face or whether you read about them or, I mean, I love Woody Hayes and Bo Schembecker, but I've never met them.
Yeah, right, right, exactly. I feel that way about John Wooden.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Love John Wooden.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you to go a little deeper here. You talked about your father. My father was a professor. The one thing that I recognized about my father as a very young person is that he really treated his students well, particularly those students that were struggling. Mm-hmm. And he would give them confidence and make them empower them to get through his class.
Right.
So I looked at that and I thought that's a great quality. When I would walk across campus with my father, the interactions that he had with students made a huge impact on me.
Right.
They were, Dr. Sturdivant, how you doing? I mean, there was like this leap of enthusiasm when he would walk by because there was this, you know, this guy cares about me. He watches out for me. Now you think back to your father. Can you think about one thing like that that really impacted you?
Well, the thing that impacted me more than anything is that he owned a dairy, right? In the morning we'd get up at, he'd get me up at 4 o'clock in the morning and we would go down to this, it was called the Egyptian Cafe, and Dad would feed me pancakes, eggs and bacon to fuel me for the day. And then we would go hitch up a team of horses and we would fill this wagon full of milk, right? Mm. Now he owned this dairy. It wasn't his job to do that, but he led by example with the people. I mean, in the summertime when I was available, that was when his workers at the dairy would go on vacation. So he would take their job so that he would better learn the dairy business and what that guy that was delivering the milk was going through. And he took me with him so that I would know what hard work and loading the milk into the wagon and pour it full of ice and hitching up a team of horses and driving those horses throughout the eastern Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, the western part of Marion, Illinois, on Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday on the eastern part of southern Illinois, Marion. And, you know, he led by example when he did that. You know, and it was, plus he wanted to know what his guys were going through as they were doing that, you know.
You know, being around you, you know, I've known you, gosh, for a total of 7 days. but listening to you and being around you, one of the things that you promote, and we're going to get into that briefly, is fundamentals. That's something I hear from your father. This attention to detail.
Right.
Detail that other people will overlook, I think that had a big impact on you as well.
Yeah, I think it did too. And I think one of the comments, and you hear it today all the time, but I think one of the comments that I can remember him saying, you know, make sure you do everything the right way. You do it the right way even when no one else is looking, you know, and basically just, you know, pay attention. Do what's right. You know, the do right rule, the Lou Holtz is right. You know, you know what's right. So he didn't have a lot of rules in my house. I mean, the only rule I can remember is that if I wasn't home by midnight, I was going to be, you know, docked a week of going out and being with my buddies, you know. So I made sure, and I believed him. Uh-huh. And so I made sure that, you know, I was always home before midnight. And that was one of his rules. So he led by example just on simple things like that.
Okay, now let's talk about Father Lang. I'm gonna give a little background here for my audience. Coach goes to Notre Dame, and you were a little undersized. And so Eric Parsegian, your coach, wanted you to start lifting. And this was back in the mid-60s, and not a lot of football players lifted back then, did they?
No, not at all. There weren't any weight rooms even at the university.
So you go to this coach at Notre Dame, Father Lang, to learn how to Olympic lift. Changed your life, didn't it?
Absolutely changed my life. It was amazing.
Now, there's something about that man, other than what he coached you to do, that probably pretty quickly made a very favorable impression on you. Can you reflect back on that?
Yeah, Father Lang was very stoic. Yeah. You know, he was a Catholic priest, and physically, he was extremely impressive. I mean, like 5'8", 240 pounds, and he was fat. You know, I mean, he was 76, I think it was, when I probably first met him.
Wow.
Maybe 77. And the guy could still dumbbell bench press a 100-pound dumbbell in one hand and about 60 or 70 in the other hand, because he had a torn pec on one side. So, and he would just do these crossword puzzles all day long on using a double bottle cap glasses. And he was an alcoholic, and he talked about that. He was diabetic. But you talked about a strong physical force and presence in my life. It was him. Man, oh man, he was just the boys at Notre Dame, of course, the men at Notre Dame, there were no girls at that time going to Notre Dame. We gravitated to that leadership. And, when Father Lang, we learned that when Father Lang said something, you better listen, because if you didn't listen, you might have a 5-pound plate thrown at your head. You know, basically, I mean, he was a very tough character. And, but he loved the guys at Notre Dame. He loved his weight room. And, you know, you always waited for the Father Langisms, right? He'd be sitting at his desk, and all of a sudden he would start blurting out some kind of a reflection that we would stop what we were doing and just to listen to what his motivation was and giving us all this information.
Do you ever catch his words coming out of your mouth?
Oh, sure. Should I still think about him, for God's sake? I've been out of Notre Dame for, 55 years or something like that. And Father Lang died with my, I graduated and he died a year after I graduated. But I still dream about him. I still dream about that weight room. And we still have a group of guys. We call ourselves the Flabbers, the Father Lang Alumni Board, that we get together once a year going back to Notre Dame. Or one of the guys is a doctor in Kansas City, and he owns a piece of property down at Table Rock in Missouri. And so we might fly into there and spend some time together.
Now, pretty quickly into your experience in that weight room, something clicked, man. Now, I've heard your stories about how you gained weight, you got faster over a period of time, but I bet it didn't take long for that to feel right to you, for that to feel home for you. Do you remember, pretty quickly saying, this is for me?
Yeah, but, I was motivated by Father Lang put stuff on the board. It was like, here's a list of all the people that have been to Father Lang's gym before I was.
Yeah.
And here are the records of the gym.
Yeah.
Well, I became very motivated very quickly to want to break some of these records. I mean, I would see things that were on there that I might be able to do. And it really motivated me very quickly to try to achieve those records. And the other thing was I grew up in a coal miner's town in Southern Illinois, and I didn't have any money. I mean, my mom and dad were, I was very well taken care of, believe me, but I didn't have any money. I didn't, it was just the way it was. And Father Lang gave monetary incentives. For example, if I could press, his big deal was when you pressed 150 pounds overhead, yeah, he'd give you $50. Well, think about this. In 1964,
that's good money.
$50 would last me a semester, for God's sake, right?
That's awesome.
And so I became very motivated for doing this stuff. And And finally, I mean, he had to raise the rules a little bit because I could always, I got where
you
I could
them
press.
Out, man.
Yeah, I could press 150 pounds easily. And then it became, well, you got to press your body weight. Okay, well, I got where I could press my body weight and I'd get another $50, right? And on and on. And then I think my really change came when I went to Father Lang and I said, look, I'd really like to come in to the gym early. I've got a couple of buddies of mine that want to come in at, you know, 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning before classes. And I was the first student that Father Lang ever gave a key to his weight room.
Dang.
And so me and another guy from Michigan, Louis Fournier, at 5:30 in the morning, we'd go over to Father Lang's and lift weights.
That was quite an honor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you knew it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, yes. I mean, first of all, I was extremely surprised that he would do it.
Yeah.
But he saw my motivation. I mean, he knew I was extremely motivated to be – you know, great lifter, and that's where I started coaching. He saw the potential that I had for getting my buddies movement efficient, you know. So, and that's where the Bergner warm-up came from.
Sure.
I mean, just all from that stuff.
Here's the big question mark I have in your little timeline. Captain of the U.S. Marine Corps. Understood. You seemed like a Marine before you even joined.
Right. Yeah, I was.
You got your master's at the University of Kentucky.
That's correct.
And you were the strength coach there, right?
Yes. John Ray was my defensive coach at Notre Dame. And when he took a head football coaching job in Kentucky, he brought me along as a strength coach.
Coach, I mean, strength coach at the University of Kentucky, that sounds like a pretty good job.
It was a great job, but I was way before my time.
Yeah.
So I got my pay was getting my master's degree.
Okay.
So, you know, so I
well, you just missed it.
Oh, I'll tell you what. And you take a look at Boyd Epley at Nebraska.
Yeah.
He's really everybody talks about him being the first strength coach. No, the very first strength coach in college football was Father Lang.
Yeah.
He was the first. And I would say I'm a close second.
Do you ever like say, geez, that timing was bad. That would have been a good place for me.
Right. Yeah. It would have definitely been my calling for
okay,
sure.
Okay. Then how did you segue from Marines, strength coach at Kentucky into a K-12 classroom?
Well, I was going to be a career Marine. I mean, you know, after, you know, you're a captain in the Marine Corps. You're moving up the ranks. I was with a special operations unit called First Force Recon.
Okay.
So I was with this group and, you know, small unit tactics were up my alley. But I ended up meeting this blonde from California.
There we go.
The
understandable variable.
Yeah.
I got it. I understand. I mean, you explained it. You got it, man.
There's no other explanation that, you know, but her dad was a neurosurgeon and he was on the USS Sanctuary in 68 in Vietnam. So he and I became really good buddies and I was in the Marine Corps and he was a captain in the Navy, which is like an 06, a colonel. And we used to play racquetball together and he actually fixed me up with his daughter.
Wow.
Which unheard of.
Unheard of. So you get the keys to Father Lang's weight room. you get a father serving up his daughter on a silver. I mean, you got a way about you, man. That's quite an accomplishment right there. You can put that on your resume.
The thing that got me, that sold him on me, is that here I am a lowly captain in the Marine Corps, an 03, but he's a captain in the Navy, which is an 06, like a colonel. And he and I had played racquetball together, and I would kick his ass.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He thought that I was going to take it easy on him. And every time he would slide over into my zone, I'd hit him, you know, with that racquetball right in the ass. And I think he appreciated that I wasn't going to bow down to him.
Yeah,
you know?
This is one of those segments where it's kind of like, don't try this at home. It could have gone either way.
it was amazing, but he was such a True Grit guy, John Wayne guy, a real, I mean, he was, you know, a neurosurgeon and one of the best in the country, and just a hell of a man. And he and I got along really well, you know.
I remember playing racquetball. I didn't mind getting hit in the ass. I didn't like getting hit in the back. That's those are the ones that hurt, man.
Well, I never let him know it hurt me.
All right. But he probably admired that too. Okay. Now, so you went. And you know, I'm a little younger than you are, but I do remember 1966, November, game of the century, Michigan State, Notre Dame, 80,000 people, East Lansing, Michigan. People are still talk about it.
Right.
That's what you came from, to teaching in a K-12 classroom. It had to be a big adjustment.
Well, you know what? Listen, if you've ever led a company of Marines, remember, these Marines, for the most part, are 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. So there's not much of an age difference there. And I mean, quite frankly, when I made the adjustment to the classroom, I mean, I'll tell you a story that as a captain in the Marine Corps, do you remember the American Gladiators?
Yep.
Okay, there a guy on the American Gladiators was named Turbo.
Yep.
Okay, I probably told you this story already, but for your listeners.
Keep going, man.
So Turbo walks into I'm fresh out of the Marine Corps. I'm probably a month out of the Marine Corps, and you know, my first teaching assignment is U.S. history.
Yeah.
I didn't know crap about U.S. history. My degree wasn't in U.S. history, but that's the job that was open. And back then, you didn't have to have a credential to teach it, but they just threw me in the classroom to teach U.S. history. So Turbo comes walking into my classroom, and he makes some, you know, rude remark, and I took a U.S. history book and hit him right between the eyes with it.
Oh, baby.
Yeah. Oh, you know, the next, it was amazing because Turbo's dad loved it. He thought it was the best thing that ever happened to his kid.
Yeah.
Today, Turbo will tell you, he only lives a quarter of a mile from me.
Yeah.
But he'll tell you that the best teacher I ever had was me. You know, and he's basically a recluse. He doesn't like to socialize with anybody. But he invites me over to his house all the time because he respects me and loves me as a teacher and what I did for him. But the bottom line is that my boss, Jim McDonald, who was the superintendent of schools, brought me into the classroom or brought me into his office and told me that under no uncertain terms, if I ever did that again, I'd be fired.
Yeah.
Oh, I had to learn real quick that I wasn't in the Marine Corps, but I was working with kids, you know. So
I just love this story, and I want to bounce something off of you here because I work with aspiring educators, and one of my objectives is to inspire students to speculate on how they'll be challenged in terms of classroom management.
Right,
and it's not just how they're going to handle the situation, but this is the important part, how they're going to maintain their composure.
Yeah, yeah.
How are they going to keep from losing their cool in this this is highly individualistic. I have a young woman in my class now who is an incredible taskmaster. She'll get assignments done and submit them before I even get home from school. Her challenge is going to be dealing with slackers, kids who are slackers.
Right.
And I can see her getting really frustrated with those kids.
Right.
So if I had a young Mike Bergner as my student right now, 20, 21, wants to be a teacher, I'd be speculating that this young man has grown up and thrived in situations where there was structure, expectations, and a clear hierarchy. Looking back on that situation with Turbo, did his actions surprise you?
Well, I just, yes, because the environment that I came from.
Right.
I mean, I was a captain in the Marine Corps, and anybody, if I gave an order, I mean, people were hanging on everything that I would say, you know, and I expected a certain behavior out of them. you know, and when Turbo came in and he showed a level of disrespect,
right,
it took me right by surprise, and I acted accordingly, that as I was trained in the Marine Corps.
So Coach, a really good exercise for future educators is to anticipate those type of situations.
Exactly.
If you would have like thought, well, you know, because it's fortunate that you were so close with the superintendent, it could have gone another way.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so like, if you think about yourself, like, okay, here's something that sets me off, I guarantee you a kid's going to do that to you.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
My first year teaching, you'll appreciate this story. I'm one of those guys that lost my hair early. And kids have a way of pointing those things out to you as if you're unaware.
Early on
in my teaching career, some kid pointed that out to me, and I thought to myself, you little, you know, but fortunately I didn't respond inappropriately. But I say that if you can anticipate your levers, your triggers before you walk into that classroom, it's going to be something that's going to serve you.
Right. Well, I really got along good with my Mexican kids because we would make fun. I mean, they would call me Chango Pelon.
Meaning what?
A chango is a big gorilla.
Okay.
And Pelon is a bald gorilla.
Okay.
So they would, you know, and I learned just enough Spanish when I was dealing with these kids to anticipate. I had no problems with them calling me big, fat, old, you know, whatever. And we would joke about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of took the tension off of that. And the other thing that I did was, you can't do today, but in my world, if I had a student that was acting out in the class, I'd make everybody else, including me, do push-ups.
That's
but awesome. I wouldn't allow that student to do them.
Yeah.
So everybody, if he was acting out, misbehaving, then I'd just say, well, Jim, that's okay. No problem. You just stand over there for a few minutes until you get your composure. But me and the rest of the students here are going to do 100 push-ups for your behavior. And you know what? It worked.
Coach Bergner, I got to tell you, man, people who have not taught in a public K-12 high school, they just don't know what teaching is, do they?
Well, they have no clue.
There's so many more variables you have to deal with.
Yeah.
I'm just at the college level right now, and it is so easy. It's so easy.
I know. I mean, think about it. You got a kid that comes into your classroom that – And you got one that's very wealthy and they got everything at home that they need. And then you got one that's fighting for the amount of food that he gets on the table and he has no clue. And dad's a drunk and mom's, you know, trying to make ends meet. And you got to deal with those personalities. And, you know, it's really a challenge.
Okay, I want to get back to one of your mentors. I'm really excited about this question. CrossFit produced a wonderful video called The Miracle on the Hill. It's a short documentary about you and your friend's fitness group who are called the Geezers. I'll leave a link on the show notes. It's outstanding. It's only about 12 minutes long. And these guys range in age from 60 to 85, working out in your gym. And there's this wonderful part of this documentary where one of your posse is performing 100 push-ups on his 83rd birthday. Talk about that, man.
Mike Vanio, former Marine sniper, he adopted me at Fallbrook High School. So my first job that I had coming out of the Marine Corps, where I hit Turbo between the eyes, Mike Vanio was a track coach, a golf coach, a football coach, and he was a fellow Marine. So Marines have this thing about, we gravitate towards each other. It's called Semper Fidelis, always faithful. And Vanya and I found each other at a teacher's meeting. And, you know, he basically became my mentor.
Yeah.
You know, and when he retired from teaching, he lives about a quarter of a mile, you know, a half mile from me. And he started coming up to the gym and Mike's gym and working out after he retired from teaching. You know, so we've maintained a great friendship throughout these years.
Now, this is interesting. I bet you remember this. when you were interviewed on the CrossFit podcast, they showed a clip. They showed that clip of him doing the push-ups. And the host, Sivan Matosian, that's the way you pronounce it?
Right.
Watched the clip of your mentor performing his push-ups and observed that he wasn't using good form. Do you remember that exchange and what you said to him?
Well, it would probably be some, come on, give me a break. He's 83 years old.
I think that's exactly what you said to him.
Yeah. So who gives a shit? I don't care. I mean,
he earned that. He earned that form.
Absolutely. He earned it. And that, you know, you can get your head and ass or your bowels in an uproar because somebody doesn't go down and touch their chest to the, you know, to the great, but they're not CrossFit, you know, games athletes. You want to do that for Rich Froning or Matt Frazier, I got it. But don't downgrade an 83-year-old that's doing 100 push-ups.
Okay, now I'm going to talk about your lovely daughter. I was very honored to take Coach Bergner's class, and it's just an outstanding class on Olympic weightlifting, and it's taught by his daughter. She's one of the main coaches. There's two individuals. Coach Bergner kind of lurks in the background and offers advice, but Sage Bergner is the one that runs that class.
Right.
And I want to talk a little bit about her because she exhibited excellent mentorship to me just yesterday when we were finishing up the class. I have limitation issues like many people who are, you know, my age. And one position in weightlifting that's really challenging for me is the front rack position, where you have the barbell sitting on the shelf of your shoulders in front, and you go down and perform a squat. And the trick is to try to get your triceps and biceps parallel to the floor. Mine don't go that high. And it's really challenging for me. And I saw that part of the curriculum, and I pulled Sage aside virtually because we're doing it on Zoom, and I said, hey, man, my front rack sucks. I don't feel real confident about this part of the course. She said, you need to try. You know, you need to just keep working at it and keep trying. And so I went through that part, and it was ugly, but I got through it. After that, she told me, she goes, I don't want to hear you say that your front rack sucks. She goes, that is self-defeating. She goes, what it takes is for you to get down in that position and just keep working on it. It's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be painful, but you will see gains.
Right.
Now, Coach Bergner, I've been teaching for 35 years. I know this stuff.
Yeah.
but yet, you know, I was voicing those same types of defeatist comments, and it took your daughter to shake me out of it, and it made a huge impression on me. She did a great job.
Well, thank you. Let me just say this about Sage. Here's her mindset. Now, she's a leader by example, right?
Right.
So one of her worst nightmares for her is rowing.
Right.
Constantly rowing. She hates it. She can't stand it. Anytime that comes up in a workout, she just goes nuts. So she comes over here the other day, and my wife are out in the garage, and she comes in, and so she sets up the rower, and she ends up rowing a marathon. And I asked her, I says, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Well, I hate rowing, so I figured, what the hell, I'm going to do a marathon because I hate rowing so much. I'm going to do what I'm not good at and what I hate so that I can hopefully get better at it. She's telling you exactly the same thing.
Did you feel like you were talking to your father at that point?
Yes.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She probably didn't even have a chance to meet him.
No. No.
Isn't that interesting?
It is absolutely amazing. Yeah. And she doesn't even know it, but so I hate rowing too. Well, I'm not rowing a marathon, but I am rowing 10,000 meters a day right now during this quarantine, you know. So, yeah. And why? Well, she had to bring it full circle for me. You always do what you're not good at so you can get better at, you know, and you want to get comfortable where you're uncomfortable. So to me, rowing is a total pain in the ass, but it's a great workout, but I hated it.
Yeah.
So I said, that's why I should do it. And it took Sage, my daughter, to make me reflect on that.
Okay, I'm going to ask you two more questions, but they're really tough questions. They're hard questions. They're provocative questions. I'm not saying that they're easily answered, but I want you to think about them. And the first thing you know, you are a fan of the fundamentals, which is a lot of what you promote, which is perfect. But man, you know, there's a difference between having a group of volunteers in a weightlifting class, or a group of Marines who pretty much have to do what you tell them, or a group of football players who signed up for this gig, versus right. like a U.S. history class
right.
in high school, where the kids don't have a choice.
Right.
Now I want to tell you one story that I think you're going to love about fundamentals, and it involves Chuck Knoll, who was the person who transformed the Pittsburgh Steelers from a laughing stock to a fantastic organization. I watched a documentary on him. You may remember an outside linebacker called Andy Russell.
Yeah.
All right. There, Knoll takes over their first year. They're 1-13. They're still god awful. You know, I mean, like, he's trying to turn them around, but it's still a little ways off. And he is all over Andy Russell's ass about his defensive stance.
Right.
He's an outside linebacker, and he says, your foot is too far forward. You need to move it back 3 inches.
Right.
And at this point, Andy Russell is not receptive. He's like thinking, yeah, this guy, you know, we're no better under this guy than we were under the last guy, and he's complaining about where I'm lining up. We got bigger right. problems than that. So he was reluctant to take him up on his advice. But Andy Russell, you know, was dispensable.
Right.
And so he realized he had to make a change. And he said he couldn't get over the difference it made. And so he became a big Chuck Knoll disciple.
Right.
And one point he asked him, he goes, how come you don't give inspirational talks to start the game? He goes, you're a professional. If I have to motivate you, I'm going to fire you.
Right.
Which I thought was really powerful.
Right.
But getting back to my question, fundamentals lead to great things, but they're also boring.
Yeah.
And if you didn't sign up for the gig, how do you get those kids sold on fundamentals?
Well, I just think that you have to be very, very patient.
Right.
You know, I kept referring to yesterday, or, you know, as the class was going on, Sage kept talking about, and Cody kept talking about 18 weeks of information
yeah.
given to you in 2 days.
Yeah.
Well, they got that from the way I taught my classes. So I organized my class for 18 weeks, and that was a semester, right? So you have in California, you have a 9-week quarter and a 9-week quarter, which made up a semester. So 18 weeks there, basically. So my kids never lifted weights in the snatch, a regular snatch, for 18 weeks. And it was just my discipline and getting them convinced that if we do these fundamentals the right way, referring to Bo Schembecker, Bear Bryant, Ara Parseghian, Lou Holtz, all these great educators that, and there were coaches, the John Woodens. John Wooden taught his athletes how to tie their shoes
before
to do anything else. And
put
we would,
socks.
Exactly. And I was a great storyteller. So for me, having that leadership and mentorship by Parseghian, that 15 minutes every workout, you'd have your warm up, and then you'd have 15 minutes of drills, and then you'd have an hour and 45 minutes of practice achieving, getting better at those drills that you were doing, so he could put it into a game plan.
Coach, you did this in a public school classroom.
Right.
These students were required to take this class. It can be done.
Oh, yes.
So if you're teaching English, you're teaching math, you're saying be patient. Keep pushing those fundamentals.
Got to. Yeah, the prepositional pyramid that I learned years and years ago was taught to me by Art Nelson when I first had to go into the classroom and teach an English class.
Yeah.
Well, what the hell am I, you know, English? Christ, I can't even speak it. But Art Nelson was a teacher that I would, on my off period, I'd go down and watch him teach. And then I would come back the next period and teach what he just taught me in that class to my students.
Yeah.
And so you just get it done. And it's not a perfect situation. You got to improvise, adapt, and overcome. And if you think that these kids are going to be motivated to go into a book and learn book learning, mm-hmm. you're kidding yourself, because you're going to have to come up with all kinds of different ways to motivate different students, just like I have to come up with different cues
yeah.
or teaching the snatch and the clean and jerk, those cues are going to be different for every student. And so how you can't teach that whole class exactly the same way. You present your material, but every class, every person in that class is a different person, a different personality. And so as an educator, you're going to have to come down and help every one of those. And if you can't do it, then maybe education isn't your forte.
And I want to add to that, because I agree with everything you said, and I want to get back to that one thing that this is going to be frustrating. They are going to challenge you, and that's where you need to anticipate those type of confrontations and work on your composure.
Right, exactly.
Okay, last question, and this is a great question. I have a lot of students who are going to be coaches, a lot of student athletes who plan on going into education and coaching whatever sport, both men and women. And some coaches make great teachers, and other coaches aren't real thrilled about the classroom. They look at, like, the playing field is what they're there for. I had a young man a number of years ago that kind of had that attitude, and I said, you need to look at your pay stub, because at the end of football season, you see what you make coaching football, and you see what you make as a teacher.
Right.
You need to know where your priorities are.
Exactly.
But, Coach, I'm going to argue that the best coaches are outstanding classroom teachers. And I'm thinking about the John Wooden.
Right.
I one of my closest friends, which I hope you get to meet someday. He's your age. He's a high school golf coach, former principal. He had Woody Hayes as a teacher. He took coaching from Woody Hayes at Ohio State. He said it was one of the best classes he ever had.
Right.
What's your advice on students who are going to become coaches? On how, or not even advice, just admonition, just like directive to how important that classroom is.
Well, I think you have the right advice. Look at your pay stub. I mean, it's just the way it is. And if you're, I mean, in the real world of coaching today, if your goal is to become a coach at the college level, the next level up, then there's a lot of sacrifices that have to be made. Number one, if I wanted to go get a job today with Dick Saban, I could go down there and probably hang out at his office or in the weight room and not get paid and volunteer my service. And then I could prove to him that I'm worthy of being hired. If that's your goal, to be a coach rather than a teacher, then you're going to have to make those sacrifices. But, you know, the teacher, you have far more leverage, I believe, becoming a classroom teacher than you do as a coach. I mean, Woody Hayes, though, if I ever wanted to learn history, I would go into Woody Hayes' office and just listen to him talk about Abraham Lincoln and
Are you ready for a great one? Are you ready for a great Woody story?
I bet you I've heard it.
Okay. You stop me if you have, but this is a contemporary of yours. Roman Catholic kid from Central Ohio, Jim Stillwagon.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard it?
No, I don't think I have.
Well, he was going to go to Notre Dame, man. He's a Catholic kid. He's going to go play for the Fighting Irish. So he grew up about 40 miles from Columbus, and he thought, well, you know, I'm an Ohio kid. At least I got to go down there and do a visit. And he was not a motivated kid academically. So he walks into Woody Hayes' office, and Woody goes, what are you reading in English class? He said, Moby Dick. He said, for the next 35 minutes.
Yeah.
A detailed lecture.
Right.
About Moby Dick.
Right.
Never talked about football.
Right. Right.
Stillwagon says, I don't know why in the hell I went to Ohio State. I don't know what it was. It was just like I walked out of there. I thought that was the weirdest thing I've ever been through in my life. But there I signed up and went to OSU. That's a good teacher.
Well, I'll tell you what. My first clinic that I ever heard Woody Hayes, he talked. He was supposed to be talking offensive football at Ohio State. He got up there and for 45 minutes he lectured on why Abraham Lincoln would have been a great offensive tackle. I mean, it was amazing. I mean, it was absolutely phenomenal. He had a sport coat on, he had his tie on, he had that grayish hair and long hair. he came up and took his jacket off, hung it on a chair, rolled up his sleeves, put his hand up on the lectern, and he started lecturing about why Abraham Lincoln would have been a great offensive tackle.
That's awesome.
It was amazing. And so, you know, those are the mentors that will allow you to kind of change your direction. Mm-hmm. I knew after watching Woody Hayes and then studying Lou Holtz. Lou Holtz was interesting to me because he was at, I think, East Carolina or someplace like that. And here I was, a head football coach at a small high school in Missouri. And I called him up one time and I asked him, I was just reading his book and I said, I got to figure out what he's doing here. So I called him up. He answered the phone.
That's awesome.
In his office. Now, he was a head football coach, and he answered the phone. Years ago, I asked him, I said, you won't remember this, but I called you.
He remembered.
He remembered all of that, and I asked him, I said, why did you do that? He says, well, just as I asked you, he said, you gave me the time to call. You deserve an answer. And he never, ever did not answer phone calls or emails or any of that kind of stuff, letters, you know, because his point was, someday you may have a running back that I need. And if you're a fan of Lou Holtz, then you're going to push that kid to want to come to, you know, a Lou Holtz coach team. And that really resonated with me. So, you know, Lou Holtz was a mentor of mine without him ever knowing it. Woody Hayes was a mentor of mine, you know?
Perfect. And that's a great segue to the last prompt I've got for you. It's just to give, you know, a teacher out there who may be struggling a little bit in the classroom, a young person is thinking about going into the classroom, but they're unsure. Give them a piece of advice on maybe finding a mentor or being open to a mentor.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just study and find out who those people are that, you know, I like reading. I mean, I do all this fictional type stuff, you know, but I enjoy it. And if I wanted to start writing, I would reach out to one of those guys that I really enjoy, like Lee Child, Brad Thorpe, you know, Jack Carr, all these guys that I really enjoy reading. Now, none of them may write me back,
right?
But I'm not afraid to reach out to any of them. Just like I encourage people to reach out to me, maybe one of those guys can write me back. And I, you know, and if they don't, that's okay. I don't take it personal.
Right.
But I just keep going out there and I try to find somebody that I can hold my hat to and learn from, you know, basically.
And just like you, there's probably someone right down the hall that can change your life.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, Coach Bergen. This has been outstanding. My favorite interview.
Thanks, James. I really appreciate being on.
So here we are at the What You Can Do Tomorrow section. And the problem is some educators, they're stagnant, man. They're stagnant. So the solution is to seek out a mentor. And as Coach Bergner pointed out, you don't even have to meet this person in person. You can have mentors that you never see, that you never meet, that you can learn from, that can be very powerful. Now, what I want you to do tomorrow is take an inventory of your significant mentors. List ways in which they impacted you. Create a goal. It could be something new, like performing the Olympic snatch or getting better at classroom management, an area where you'd like to grow. Find someone who could help you obtain this goal and reach out to this person. And also, be open to your current mentors and future mentors. Finding a mentor can be transformational. By being open to mentorship, you may just transform yourself into a mentor. Mike Bergner would not be who he is without Father Lang. And Father Lang probably was unaware of how profound his influence would be once he started mentoring a young Mike Bergner. Good luck tomorrow engaging your kids.
Show notes for this episode can be found at jamesallensternovant.com. If you enjoy Hacking Engagement, please subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes.